From the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, here's the news for this day in Maine, Monday, August 22nd, 2016. I'm Andrew Catalina, in for Barbara Caridi. And on this day, the LePage administration has announced it's going through the welfare rolls to ensure benefits aren't being paid to would-be terrorists. Maine is on track for a record number of opioid overdose deaths in 2016. And Maine's congressional delegation is intervening after the mail carrier for Two Islands was terminated from his position. Those stories and more coming up.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th. kvcc.me.edu.
The LePage administration says it's scouring its welfare rolls to ferret out fraud and abuse by immigrants and to ensure taxpayer money isn't flowing to would-be terrorists. The announcement follows the recent revelation of an Iranian refugee from Maine who died fighting for the terror group ISIS and a mysterious leak to a Boston newspaper that the man and his family received benefits. As Steve Missler reports, only a small percentage of legal non-citizens use two large welfare programs, but statistics may do little to change the supercharged politics of immigrant welfare.
Shortly after news broke that Adnan Fazeli was killed last year while fighting for ISIS, Governor Paul LePage labeled President Obama's immigration policies an utter failure. A day later, the Boston Herald cited state officials in a story that asserted Fazeli received welfare benefits while he was in Maine. And later, Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Mary Mayhew told WCSH that her department had already investigated welfare cases that had led them to call the FBI.
Several cases include concerns around criminal activity and terrorism.
Fazeli immigrated to the United States while George W. Bush was in the White House. His reported receipt of welfare has not been confirmed by DHHS, which is prohibited from disclosing such information, and has since denied that it was the source of the leak to the Boston Herald. And last year, the Office of Attorney General successfully prosecuted 36 cases of welfare fraud out of 100 referrals from DHHS. It's unclear whether non-citizen cases were among the agency's referrals, but none of the convictions or the over $460,000 in restitution settlements involved non-citizen welfare recipients. And so far, Fazeli is the only refugee who has resettled here to ever be implicated in terrorist activities or as an ISIS recruit. But those facts are unlikely to influence polarized attitudes about immigration, welfare, and terrorism, according to Mark Brewer, a political science professor at the University of Maine.
This is certainly one of those times where reality matters very little, if at all. I mean, he could be the only person that fits this out there, and it still doesn't matter.
Brewer says, politically speaking, the Fazeli case is a trifecta for LePage and his supporters.
It's really like a win-win-win for Republicans.
Brewer says the controversy hits across three key issues that Republicans have successfully used to their advantage. Those issues also happen to be a key to the platform championed by GOP presidential hopeful Donald Trump. He hit all three during a recent rally in Portland when he suggested that Somali refugees had taxed Minnesota's safety net while forming an enclave of potential terror recruits. Trump said refugees could be the great Trojan horse of our time. Somalis are a significant immigration population in Maine. In 2015, over 440 refugees resettled here, most from Iraq or Somalia, according to data from the Catholic Charities of Maine. Native-born Americans represent 1.2 million of Maine's 1.3 million residents, according to the U.S. Census. Foreign-born residents number just over 47,000. That's about 3% of the population. But concerns about immigrants, as well as welfare, run high here.
Do you think Maine cities and towns should continue to use your tax dollars to pay welfare benefits to illegal immigrants?
In 2014, the Republican Governors Association ran an ad that asked viewers if Maine cities and towns should be allowed to use tax dollars to pay for the welfare benefits of, quote, illegal immigrants. It put progressive groups and refugee advocates on the defensive, along with the campaign of Democrat Mike Michaud, the former congressman who was attempting to defeat LePage. The governor convincingly won re-election, and Republicans made strong gains in the legislature. The pundits' election postmortem cited welfare and immigrant welfare as a defining issue. Democrats have tread lightly ever since. And Brewer says Democrats lose on welfare. He says the Fazeli case presents additional problems.
But now, if I want to talk about this, I got to talk about welfare, I got to talk about immigration, and I got to talk about terrorism.
That dynamic may be why the Democratic voices opposing LePage's statements last week were confined to termed-out legislators or those in safe districts. It may also be why the most vocal critic of the leak of Fazeli's reported receipt of welfare benefits to a Boston newspaper was the Maine ACLU. It may also be why few are questioning the LePage administration's review of non-citizen welfare recipients for abuse, even though immigrants represent the vast minority of beneficiaries. For example, non-citizens represent about half of 1% of the families receiving cash benefits under the federal program TANF in Maine. Non-citizen food stamp recipients represented less than half of 1%. And last year, the federal government published a study examining the barriers immigrants face in obtaining benefits. Among them, the 1996 Welfare Reform Act, pushed by former President Bill Clinton. The sweeping legislation made a lot of big changes, including ending the practice of granting immigrants the same eligibility to the safety net as native-born Americans. The 20th anniversary of the welfare overhaul is today. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Maine continues to see a record number of overdose deaths. The latest figures show 189 people have died of overdoses in the first 6 months of this year, up from 126 during the same period last year. As Mal Leary reports, state officials are worried the state is on track to see close to 400 by the end of December.
An analysis of the drug overdose death records by forensic anthropologist Dr. Marcella Sorg at the University of Maine shows most of them are the result of combining illicit and pharmaceutical drugs, in particular, the use of the drug fentanyl. Sorg says of the 189 overdose deaths in the first 6 months of the year, 84 were attributed, at least in part, to fentanyl. She says the toxicity of fentanyl is part of the reason deaths are increasing.
Sometimes it isn't that a larger number of people are using drugs, but they are using drugs that are a lot more lethal, and so they're more apt to die from it.
And in 85 of the deaths, Sorg analyzed, at least one pharmaceutical opioid like oxycodone or methadone was found to be present. Combining drugs is not unusual, but what concerns Sorg is the jump in the numbers. She says Maine could see close to 400 drug deaths this year.
The first half of the year this year may not be a good indicator of how high it could go for the year as a whole. It may increase quite a bit in the second half. It may not.
Attorney General Janet Mills shares that fear. She says the state has been trying to respond to the drug crisis with legislation limiting opioid prescriptions and increasing drug agents and prosecutors. But Mills says more needs to be done to hold drug dealers accountable.
And when you come in the state, or you come through the state, or you are from the state, and you provide heroin and fentanyl or fentanyl analogs to somebody, and they die from taking those drugs, then you are responsible for the death of that person.
But being tougher on drug dealers is only part of the solution, Mills says. She says the state needs to do more to educate the public about the risk of drugs and to expand drug treatment. Dr. Meredith Norris, an addiction doctor with Grace Street Services in Lewiston, says she's disappointed but not surprised at the increasing death toll.
What we are seeing is what I predicted a few years ago started to happen, that when there's less availability of opioids without an increase in treatment options, people don't get sober, they just switch to what is available on the street.
Dr. Norris served on the Maine Opioid Collaborative that was co-chaired by Mills, the U.S. Attorney for Maine, Thomas Delahanty, and Public Safety Commissioner John Morris. Norris says too much of the state's focus has been on curtailing the drug supply instead of expanding quality drug treatment.
I feel like I've been watching a slow-moving train wreck for a couple of years now, and I feel like all the wrong solutions are being promoted.
For example, Norris says the legislature has refused to adequately increase the Medicaid reimbursement rate for methadone treatment providers, and the LePage administration has proposed rules to make it more challenging to provide the service. Norris says until state leaders take a more balanced approach to address the drug crisis, the number of deaths from drug overdoses will continue to grow. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A federal judge in Texas has sided with Maine Governor Paul LePage and several other states over their opposition to transgender students' use of bathrooms and locker rooms of their choice. In May, the federal government told public schools that transgender students must be allowed to use bathrooms and locker rooms consistent with their gender identity, but Judge Reed O'Connor is blocking the federal directive, at least for now. Zach Hyden, legal director for the ACLU of Maine, says O'Connor's decision is unlikely to affect transgender students in Maine.
This is one judge in Texas who's trying to block advice and guidance from the Obama administration, but it's not clear at all what legal weight that should have, especially for states like Maine, where we have independent state protections. Here, our Maine Human Rights Act protects transgender students and guarantees them the right of access.
The Obama administration's guidance in May came days after the Justice Department sued North Carolina over a state law that requires people to use public bathrooms that correspond with the sex on their birth certificate. That prompted 9 states and 3 individual governors, including LePage, to challenge the policy as unconstitutional. Today is the first day of school in Texas and in many other parts of the country, and Hyden says there is one thing that he does think will result from the judge's decision.
The only effect that this ruling will definitely have is make students more likely to face abuse and hostility in schools. And it's hard to see why that's in anybody's interest.
Maine's Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Commissioner will serve on Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump's Agricultural Advisory Committee. Walt Whitcomb will be one of 64 advisors, many heavy hitters in the farm policy world, and many from large agricultural states. Whitcomb, who also owns a small dairy and meat farm in Waldo, says his presence on the committee means a voice for small family farmers, and he says Trump seems to be open to listening to what he and others have to say.
I know that farmers that have had an opportunity to sit down with him beyond the sort of posturing that occurs at rallies and in some of the media events, and have found him very engaged in the issues.
One issue Whitcomb says Trump is responsive on is the need for a guest worker program for agricultural employees. Some alert preteens who found a loaded gun near a South Portland playground are being credited for averting a dangerous situation. Fred Bever has more.
South Portland Patrol Sergeant Todd Barlow says 3 young girls were playing in a local playground Sunday morning when they discovered what they at first thought was a toy.
The 5-shot revolver had 3 live rounds and 2 spent casings. The girls were playing, and one of the friends went off behind like a construction trailer or something and came back, sort of walking back to her friends with the gun. And one of the girls said, "That looks like it might be real." And the girl threw it to the ground. That's when they ran home, which it worked out great. I mean, nobody got hurt, obviously. Very, very lucky we dodged one there, I think.
The grandmother of one of the girls called police, who retrieved the weapon. Later that day, police received a report of a gun that had been stolen from a car in the same area, and they identified it as the same weapon. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Westbrook police say a snakeskin found on the banks of the Penobscot River at Riverbank Park is about 12 feet long. Police Captain Sean Lally says it was found on Saturday night.
A citizen happened upon it and notified us. We had an officer go there and collect it, take some photographs, and bring it back to the station.
The skin is thought to have possibly belonged to a snake first spotted nearly 2 months ago at the river. The snake, nicknamed Wessie, caused something of a sensation in the city, with several social media accounts popping up under its name. Meanwhile, Lally says people shouldn't be too worried about running into a 12-foot snake at the boat launch.
I don't think it's any different than just being aware of your surroundings. There are dogs in that park. They're, you know, domestic animals. We're around animals all the time. So I would just say to be wary and cautious, but not paranoid.
Biologists say it's likely a Burmese python. The snakes can grow to 18 feet, but are tropical animals and unlikely to survive a Maine winter. The federal government has agreed to pay Maine about $413,000 to clean up decades-old hazardous pollution at oil storage facilities. Maine Attorney General Janet Mills alleged 2 weeks ago in U.S. District Court that Maine faces $10.8 million in total cleanup costs for pollution at former Portland Bangor Waste Company sites in Casco and Ellsworth. The lawsuit claimed the Department of Defense had used the sites, which stored waste in tanks that leaked contaminants like lead into the ground. Maine and the federal government reached an August 18th settlement that says it's not an admission of wrongdoing or liability for either side. In May, the state won a settlement of just over $100,000 from the federal government after arguing the agency neglected cleanup of a South Berwick Naval Shipyard disposal site. For years, residents of Swan's Island and Frenchboro have depended on a mail carrier who not only brought them letters and packages, but other necessities from the mainland such as food and medicine. But as of this spring, that mail carrier's contract with the Postal Service ended over a dispute over how he carried the mail with other freight items. Some residents fear the loss of the contract to their longtime carrier now jeopardizes other essential island deliveries, and members of Maine's congressional delegation have gotten involved. Patty White reports.
Ever since Brian Kraftjack bought the Swan's Island General Store 3 years ago, he says he, like other residents of Swan's Island and Frenchboro, has relied on a guy named Lewis or L.J. Hopkins.
He's a lifeline to the mainland for both these island communities.
Because for nearly three decades, Hopkins has been the go-to for supplies on the island. He delivers the food Kraftjack sells at his store. He delivers prescriptions to residents. Whatever last-minute need crops up, says Kraftjack, Hopkins is always there to help.
If a lobsterman's boat breaks down while he's out fishing, he calls LJ on the cell phone, and LJ will have parts for him the same afternoon generally.
Hopkins loads up these items in his van, along with packages from FedEx, UPS, and, until April, mail from the U.S. Postal Service. That's when Hopkins needed to sign a new contract, but he says he couldn't agree to the terms.
They told me I could no longer take anything but the mail.
Hopkins says the Postal Service told him that if he wanted to load mail in his van, he couldn't carry the other items he delivers to island residents.
Actually, I'm not turning my back on these people. That would put me to where I am today.
Islanders pay Hopkins for his deliveries, but he says the Postal Service contract, worth $80,000 a year, accounted for half his income. And delivering everything together, the mail and other freight items, is the only way to be cost efficient. He has to pay ferry, fuel, and insurance bills, and hires help to get the mail from Swan's Island to Frenchboro.
Without this Postal Service contract, it won't be long till LJ can no longer operate.
Keith Harriton is an attorney for both Hopkins and general store owner Brian Kraftjack. Harriton has written to the U.S. Postal Service to try to resolve the matter and is circulating a petition to support Hopkins, which he says has more than 600 signatures. The fear among residents is that without the postal contract, Hopkins will no longer be able to offer his other delivery services. Kraftjack puts it bluntly.
If we don't have a freight service that serves both Frenchboro and Swan's Island, there's no store.
Maine Senators Susan Collins, Angus King, and Representative Bruce Poliquin sent a letter to the Postal Service last week asking to allow the transport of mail and freight in a single vehicle. USPS spokesman Steve Doherty says he doesn't know the specifics of the Swan's Island and Frenchboro mail contract, but
the thing is, the mail has to be transported, obviously, in such a way that it's protected from the elements and that it's not commingled with other items that could compromise the security, safety, or sanctity of the mail.
Daugherty says his understanding is that Hopkins wasn't prohibited from carrying other freight. He just had to do it in a certain way, but opted not to sign the contract.
There were some issues in terms of what was being commingled and how the mail was being carried and things like that.
Hopkins says he doesn't know why he's being punished for something he says he's never done wrong. He points out that other islands carry mail and freight together, and he hopes the Postal Service will allow him to do the same. A new 4-year contract for the position begins this October. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, August 22nd, 2016. Our theme music was composed by Robert Holt. Thanks to our news leaders Keith Shortall and Susan Sharon, and to Fred Bever, Nora Flaherty, Mal Leary, Steve Missler, and Patty White for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes or email us at tdim@mpbn.net. I'm Andrew Catalina. For all of us here at Maine Public Broadcasting, thanks for listening.